Good afternoon. Yes, little children. It's April 18th, 2023, and the time is 18:36. What a time that is. Eastern Daylight Time, Ward Green, with you. Our study for today is from the very last paragraph of Chapter 6 of Wild Road. But before we do that, I've got a short video I'd like to share with you from Dr. Robert Cathcart III, the late Dr. Robert Cathcart III.
Oh, yeah, well, that has to do with the renal threshold, is that, let's say, for instance, if that study that shows that there is a maximum effect at 2 grams a day, that just means that if you take over that amount, it is spilling out in the urine, you see. But it was in the bloodstream to get there. But now, if then there is some black hole in the body's metabolism somewhere where there's generating huge amounts of free radicals, then that extra dose of ascorbate will go down that hole, you might say, rather than going out in the urine. I mean, quite obviously, if the average person gets diarrhea, now, see, when they take an overload of vitamin C, first of all, most of it goes out in the urine, but finally it gets to the point where it creates diarrhea, and you're losing it through the stool. But so that if the average person with a strong stomach is getting diarrhea at 10 to 15 grams for 24 hours, but then that same person can take 200 grams when they've got mononucleosis without diarrhea, obviously this is going somewhere. And we think what it's doing is neutralizing the free radicals generated by the disease process. So that all of these studies that are working with people who are well just don't have anything to do with this thing that we're talking about and with the treatment of disease. It's the people who are sick that should be studied and find out what the devil is happening with these huge doses of vitamin C when you're sick.
Right. Let's go back here. That was Dr. Robert Cathcart III talking about the use of vitamin C, also called ascorbate, in the treatment of infection and even other diseases like cancer. He speaks about that as well. The use of vitamin C to treat various conditions, let's say, of disease, was something that this particular doctor specialized in. These videos are found by going to omarchives.org is one place you can find them. And you can probably find, I know you used to be able to, very recently I could find videos by Robert Cathcart III by searching for his name, Robert Cathcart III, and searching for vitamin C or something of that nature, because that was what he specialized in. So the significance of this date, meaning 2751 BCE, is marked by the year 1 given by Abel Feragi, the learned Armenian historian of the 13th century CE. For Nimrod's reign, as from 531 years after the deluge. In the Blessed Genealogy, it's also 2751 BCE. Exactly 531 years after the deluge of 3282 BCE. This is the date, actually, for the dispersion, says Abel Feragi, said to be one of the most learned and versatile men from the Syriac Orthodox Church. It would be a wonderful privilege to delve more deeply into this date and its meaning for Egypt, which we may indeed do. But it is beyond the scope of this chapter. Summer solstice in the Julian calendar throughout most of the 28th century BCE Before I continue, though, I want to make a point. By the way, there are no ordinary humans. Humans are created in the image of God. Okay? Summer solstice in the Julian calendar throughout most of the 28th century BCE was July 16th or July 17th. And when Sothis rose, depended strongly upon the latitude. That is, the rising of Sothis depended strongly upon the latitude, while New Year's Day Thoth the first in the Egyptian calendar drifted through the centuries. The Egyptian calendar, when it originated in the range 2800 to 2700 BCE, or 28th century, or when it did not, came to Thoth the first in 2774 BCE at Eridu, July 18th, very near the date of both summer solstice and the rising of Sothis. Apart from this coincidence, we have little other than mythology or writing without dates to go on in order to establish the Egyptian calendar start, and the date of the summer solstice is the marker to pray exact it. So now we're going to talk a little bit in this footnote here about some interesting things that are facts about the chronology. The Bible, at the risk of opening up a digression from the present topic, did give calendar dates for the day of the deluge event itself, and for another day 1 year later, as simply the 27th day of the second month. The Masoretic text differs in giving the 17th day of the second month for the deluge downpours start. Okay, but the ending was the 27th in that case. But the discrepancy is resolved when we reckon the day in the Septuagint, the 27th, from the calendar later known as the Egyptian. Should we only extrapolate it backwards to 3282 BCE, for then we mark Phaophi 27 was also a lunar day 17 in the year 3282 itself. Phaophi being the second Egyptian month. And after one full year had elapsed also, we mark that in 3281 BCE, Phaophi 27 in Egyptian time fell on lunar day 27. Amazingly, adding to this dispassionate observation, in both 3282 and 3281 BCE, Phaophi 27 corresponds to January 17th, Julian. This a day computing is the day after winter solstice. Markedly elegant this appears, save that the year 5550 BCE, Jehovah be glorified, has a correspondence in the Blessed Genealogy to Adam year 1, or Anno Mundi 1, in other words, year of the world 1, in the Egyptian date Phaophi 27, which is Julian August 7th, 5550 BCE, as summer solstice. The Egyptian calendar date of the deluge is the date of summer solstice at man's creation and fell on January 17th, with January 16th as the winter solstice in 3282. 5550 BCE being man's creation in the Blessed Genealogy chronology, and 3282 BCE being the BG year of the deluge onset. The BG is our Blessed Genealogy chronology. That's the end of chapter 6. There's a lot to digest in that footnote. That could take, you know, I mean, that's something that could be worth studying for months. I mean, it's something that is very fascinating as far as the remarkable correspondences in dates and numbers for those dates. And it's really engaging and it's compelling. It seems to be compelling that I want to research it. I feel like probably many people will feel the same way, that we want to research this more. It's such a remarkable correspondence to the Bible text, what we find with the Egyptian calendar and what we find with the Julian calendar. It's just remarkable. And what we find in the Blessed Genealogy, too. It's all corresponding in such a way as to evoke wonder in, at least speaking for myself, in my mind, but I suppose there may be others who feel the same way. Let's begin with the proverb now for the Bible study. There's more to study here. I know there is. Deuteronomy 16, that's right. I had some proverbs. I had several proverbs, actually. After I had the one, I thought of some others. And I'd like to study what the translation of the between the two evenings means, and how we arrive at that. But I don't know if we're going to have time to do that. It's just too many things to do in one day. Gathering by the hand. That's right, yeah. The one gathering by the hand is the one that makes increase. That's the proverb that I'd like to study today. And there were a few others that I thought of. I haven't looked it up yet. Oh. Okay. Proverbs 13 and 11. Valuable things resulting from vanity become fewer, but the one collecting by the hand is the one that makes increase. That is indeed fascinating. And there are some other scriptures right around that too, about expectation, which we studied already. And about presumptuousness in verse 10, too. So we have Proverbs 13 and 11. And we have, we're on April 18th, right. Yeah. Very good. Some very wise words, as always, found in Proverbs. Deuteronomy 16 and 6, it says, you should sacrifice the Passover in the evening as soon as the sun sets. So this is the one place, or at least one place, in the Hebrew text, in the Masoretic Hebrew text, where we don't see the use of the expression between the two evenings. It doesn't say between the two evenings in this particular case, and it's talking about the Passover, so it's clearly saying as soon as the sun sets, in other words, at the time of sunset. And that favors, in some ways, the Pharisees' interpretation, which was between the first touching of the sun on the horizon and the sun's disappearing below the horizon. That was what between the two evenings meant. Between the two evenings meant to the Pharisees. And that's why they pushed their Passover one day forward, because the actual day didn't begin until the sun was below the horizon. So they had to do it on the 14th. And that meant they had to do it at the end of the 14th day instead of the beginning, which is what the Sadducees and more conventional Jews did. And the Samaritans too, I believe. So all of these things pertain to this between the two evenings. And it shows that their slaughtering was to be somewhere around sunset in this particular verse. But let's look at what it means between the two evenings. We see the expression here at Genesis 1 and 14. We see to separate the day from the night at Genesis 1 and 14. And it's always the expression, let's see, where is it now? 1 and 14. Right, to separate, yes. So if we look at that text between to separate the day from the night, Genesis 1 and 14, it says in the Hebrew text, this is it right here, and said God, let there be lights in the firmament of the heavens. We're reading from right to left, but we're reading groups from left to right of these words. To divide between, and there's the word bane, between the day, and then it says, and between the night. So the word between in this case occurs twice. But the meaning of bane is clearly here, it means between. And in the case about which we were talking about with regard to the Passover, it's at Exodus 12 and 6, and it says here, if we go back in at the beginning of verse 6, it says, and you shall keep it, or it keep is how it reads, but keep it, you shall keep it until 4 and 10 the day, in other words, of the month. So 14th day of the month, the 14th of the month. This, you should keep this, in other words, until the 14th of the month, and shall kill it, the whole assembly. The whole assembly shall kill it. The whole assembly of the congregation of Israel shall kill it at twilight. But there's the word bane again, between. And the word twilight is the word twi, or the word, the part of the word twi means between. Twilight means between, right? And twilight, we think of that as between sunset and absolute black night or darkness. So it's twilight, between the sunset and the darkness. It means between, in other words, twilight. But it's the word for twilight here is plural. It has the Hebrew im at the end of it. It's the evenings pluralized, the plural form of evening. So it's really saying between the evenings, because it says the. In front of the word twilight, there's the word the, which is H plus the vowel A in Hebrew. Ha arbayim, between the evenings. But because it's plural, it must be saying between the two evenings, logically, because there's no three evenings that we know of. So it's between, it's plural. And it's between, which generally means between two things. So between evenings, between the two evenings, is the literal translation of that. And here was Deuteronomy 16 and 6. It said, at the going down of the sun, at the going down of the sun, and at twilight, at the going down of the sun. So twilight is, the word twilight's here, Ereb, that's there. That word Ereb, which is the last three letters of that word there. So at twilight was when the Passover was to be sacrificed, right? But it was to be at the time that was between the two evenings in Exodus, which was the original command in the Mosaic Law, the first appearance of that command. So when we look at this word again, Exodus 12 and 6, this word, ha'arbaim. Ha'arbaim means between the two evenings, but it's often translated at twilight or in the evening. That's how it's translated. But it means near to sunset or between those two evenings that have to do with the sun setting, when the sun hits the horizon, is one interpretation. And the other one, and when it fully sets, those two evenings, or the other interpretation is between the time the sun goes down and complete darkness. But since they were to sacrifice it as soon as the sun sets, we could interpret it as meaning in that narrow period, which the Pharisees took it to mean, which was between the sun's first touching the horizon and the sun's becoming just below the horizon. Now, this word Ireb is in Strong's Concordance. It's this word spelled basically in Hebrew, it's E-R-B, or E-R-E-B if you add the vowel. And it means evening, right? Or if it's got the plural form, Arbaim, then it means plural evenings, plural, or the two evenings, if it's got the word the, and the plural of evenings. If it's Ha'arbaim, it's the two evenings in that case. And then if we have, this is the word between, Bain, or Bain, it can also mean a few other things, but it's got this meaning between, among, you know, it means sometimes a few, slightly differently, like it can, it's from the word being, actually, that's right. It means an interval, a space between, so that's what it means, that's the definition of it, in Strong's Concordance, that's the NAS Concordance. The definition is an interval space between in Strong's Concordance. Also, right. So it means between the two evenings. That's clearly what is being said there. So why? And let's see what this word bane means in another important context. Okay. So we'll look at this from the standpoint of where this word occurs in the Bible. We see bane occurs. That's the definition of it. We have it here somewhere. Is that it? Oh, there it is. Maybe this is it. Bane, right. It's bane. It occurs, one of the interesting places it occurs is right here in Genesis 9 and 16. We can really get a sense of what it's really saying, what this really means, this word bane. In Genesis 9, we looked at Deuteronomy 16 and 6, which in the New World Translation reference version says you should sacrifice the Passover in the evening as soon as the sun sets. Okay. And Genesis 9 and 16, that's the one I want to show you here. It says, let's just focus on the word between here. The covenant to time indefinite between God and every living soul. So that is clear that it is talking about, you would not use another word there. It's talking about this idea between, a covenant between God and every living soul. That's what it's talking about. And that's the word bane. If we look at that in Genesis 9 and 16, right there, the word bane. There it is. You can even, have we shown that here? Let's see if we've got it here. Genesis 1, Exodus 12, Deuteronomy. Right, we should be able to show that here. Open a link. There we go. Genesis 9 and 16. Okay, we'll have to do it some other way. We want the interlinear. Interlinear. This is BibleHub.com. So we just go Genesis 9 right here. And verse 16, right? If we can. We just go down to verse 16. Okay, here it is. Yeah, here we are. The rainbow. Right. Between God. It's right there. Yeah. The covenant everlasting between God and every creature living. There it is. So that's the idea of between. Bane. So where we had that at Genesis 1, or it wasn't Genesis 1 that we were talking about, though, originally. The idea for the Passover was from Exodus, not Genesis, from Exodus 12 and 6, between the two evenings, but often translated at twilight. But it really says, literally, between, bane. They slaughter it between the evenings, or between the two evenings, arbaim. Ha arbaim. Bane ha arbaim. Between the two evenings. That's the full picture of what it's talking about. Okay, so that, I hope, helps to cast some light on the subject. And we see here, yeah, in the Insight books, I think I know what happened here. We had something changed. There it is. Here it is. So Deuteronomy 16 and 7, right. The expression may be interpreted as between sunset and dark. And the weight of evidence points to that. It would certainly mean sometime after the initial sunset, certainly. It's sometime after that. So therefore, it takes time to prepare the meal. So the Passover meal was typically eaten quite a ways after sunset. Quite a long time, because they'd have to prepare they'd have to slaughter the animal, but they'd have to prepare the meal, prepare the meat by cooking it and so on. And it was, have to bleed the meat, prepare it. All of these things would take time. Okay. So, that's true. That's very true. All right. Now, we've studied, we've watched our video from Dr. Cathcart, and we're going to read, we've done our proverb. So the only thing left to do is Genesis 49. Later on, Jacob called his sons and said, "Gather yourselves together, that I may tell you what will happen to you in the final part of the days. Assemble yourselves and listen, you sons of Jacob. Yes, listen to Israel, your father. Reuben, you are my firstborn, my vigor, and the beginning of my generative power, the excellence of dignity and the excellence of strength. With reckless license, like waters, do not you excel, because you have gone up to your father's bed. At that time, you profaned my lounge. He went up to it. Simeon and Levi are brothers. Instruments of violence are their slaughter weapons. Into their intimate group do not come, O my soul. With their congregation do not become united, O my disposition. Because in their anger they killed men, and in their arbitrariness they hamstrung bulls. Cursed be their anger, because it is cruel, and their fury because it acts harshly. Let me parcel them out in Jacob, and let me scatter them in Israel. As for you, Judah, your brothers will laud you. Your hand will be on the back of the neck of your enemies. The sons of your father will prostrate themselves to you. A lion cub Judah is. From the prey, my son, you will certainly go up. He bowed down, he stretched himself out like a lion, and like a lion, who dares rouse him? The scepter will not turn aside from Judah, neither the commander's staff from between his feet until Shiloh comes, and to him the obedience of the peoples will belong. Tying his full-grown ass to a vine, and the descendant of his own she-ass to a choice vine, he will certainly wash his clothing in wine, and his garment in the blood of grapes. Dark red are his eyes from wine, and the whiteness of his teeth is from milk. Zebulun will reside by the seashore, and he will be by the shore where the ships lie anchored, and his remote side will be towards Sidon. Issachar is a strong-boned ass, lying down between the two saddlebags, and he will see that the resting place is good, and that the land is pleasant, and he will bend down his shoulder to bear burdens, and he will become subject to slavish forced labor. Dan will judge his people as one of the tribes of Israel. Let Dan prove to be a serpent by the roadside, a horned snake at the wayside, that bites the heels of the horse so that its rider falls backward. I shall indeed wait for salvation from you, O Jehovah. As for Gad, a marauder band will raid him, but he will raid the extreme rear. Out of Asher, his bread will be fat, and he will give the dainties of a king. Naphtali is a slender hind. He is giving words of elegance. Offshoot of a fruit-bearing tree, Joseph is the offshoot of a fruit-bearing tree by the fountain that propels its branches up over a wall. But the archers kept harassing him and shot at him and kept harboring animosity against him. And yet his bow was dwelling in a permanent place, and the strength of his hands was supple. From the hands of the powerful one of Jacob, from there is the shepherd, the stone of Israel. He is from the God of your father, and he will help you. And he is with the Almighty, and he will bless you with the blessings of the heavens above, with the blessings of the watery deep lying down below, with the blessings of the breasts and womb. The blessings of your father will indeed be superior to the blessings of the eternal mountains, to the ornament of the indefinitely lasting hills. They will continue upon the head of Joseph, even upon the crown of the head of the one singled out from his brothers. Benjamin will keep on tearing like a wolf. In the morning he will eat the animal seized, and at evening he will divide spoil. End of the quotation from Jacob. All these are the 12 tribes of Israel, and this is what their father spoke to them when he was blessing them. He blessed them each one according to his own blessing. After that he commanded them and said to them, I am being gathered to my people. Bury me with my fathers in the cave that is in the field of Ephron the Hittite, in the cave that is in the field of Machpelah, that is in front of Mamre in the land of Canaan, the field that Abraham purchased from Ephron the Hittite for the possession of a burial place. There they buried Abraham and Sarah, his wife. There they buried Isaac and Rebekah, his wife. And there I buried Leah. The field purchased and the cave that is in it were from the sons of Heth. Thus Jacob finished giving commands to his sons. Then he gathered his feet up onto the couch and expired and was gathered to his people. That's the end of Genesis 49. Perhaps the wife of Jacob should be pronounced Leah instead of Leah. I would like to note that. The other thing, I would like to note a couple of other things, actually. Just a very few things. The one thing being that Judah, of course, is the one from whom it was prophesied would come Shiloh. Shiloh being a very important word, the one to whom it belongs, basically, is what it means. So that implies something very significant as to God's purpose, specifically the Messiah. And we know that the Messiah did come through Judah's line, the lineage of Judah, which produced also King David, very important partial fulfillment. The typical fulfillment of the Messiah was King David, or perhaps even Solomon, actually, because, of course, Solomon was a very great king, the son of David also. But the antitypical fulfillment would be the much greater fulfillment, which was the Lord Jesus, the Messiah. And he also came through the line of Judah through his mother. So this line of Judah was very important. But the interesting thing was, in this family, Judah was not the most prominent. Joseph was the most prominent. And that's the most fascinating thing here in this, considering that the Messiah doesn't come through the line of Joseph, but Joseph is the most prominent among his brothers. As it says here, the one singled out from his brothers. Genesis 49 and 26. So it is April 18th, 2023. It's 1912 hours, soon to be 1913 in a few seconds. Hours, Eastern Daylight Time. I'm Ward Green. I hope you've enjoyed very much the study, as much as I have today, little children. And may God bless you once again. Praise Jehovah in all that we do. Rejoice in all our works as we are commanded also by the Word of God. And there's so many things. Remember the Prince of Peace, Jesus, our Lord, the Anointed of Jehovah. And for Word Green, it's Talk Fibby and Live Dusty saying bye for now.